This is Y Nada Más, a Real Madrid Podcast.
Everybody, and welcome to Y Nada Más, a Real Madrid podcast. It is good to be back, and it is a good time, guys. It is a good time, especially right now, to be a Madridista. My God, what a run of games we've had. What an intense moment, an intense month, I would say, because it started on November 28th, this string of five games. It's been a great, great start. It's a great start to the holiday season, for Real Madrid. But it's, everything is just looking great and going in the right direction for us. So, before we get into all that, guys, I just want to say thank you to everybody for the support. We are actually now, somebody on the YouTube channel commented and said, I should check out the subreddit that there is for Real Madrid and advertise there. So I reached out to the moderators of that Real Madrid subreddit and, talked about the podcast, and it was cool. I had a couple people on there that said they were listeners, people that then said that, they hadn't heard it before, but they were going to subscribe. So we're reaching out, spreading the love of Real Madrid to other Madridistas. And like I always say, guys, this is a fan podcast. I'm not a journalist. I've had background in radio, but my background is actually the sport that, aside from, I've always had a passion for football. Football is, I would say, is my number one. It's kind of always been my number one. But I would tell you the truth. I mean, I was never, when I was younger and I was here in the United States, playing soccer, playing football wasn't as, you didn't get a chance as much to play it, and the level wasn't really good at that time when I was a young kid. And then I moved to South America, and of course the level was much better. But at the same time, I think I let fear get the best of me, because at that time I was already a young kid, early teens. When I moved there, and at that time, all the other kids were already playing soccer, and were already playing football since they were young kids. And I saw them as beasts. I saw them at that. They were amazing. Already 13, 14, 15 year old kids were already killing it, So I let it get the best of me, And so I never pursued it as much as I wanted to. And so I've always been a fan of the game, very much diehard fan of the game. And then for some odd reason, I fell in love with combat sports, fell in love with fighting. I was an active fighter. I did Muay Thai kickboxing. I coached Muay Thai fighters. I trained Muay Thai fighters. Went to Thailand, trained, fought, won some, lost some, won some championships, lost some. But in the end, that's kind of my background, guys. So I kind of bring... But the thing is, I think I bring that coaching mentality. I've always loved to coach. So I bring that coaching mentality that I experienced when I was in Muay Thai, and still am involved in the Muay Thai game, still part of something that I love very much. I had a podcast about it, and I bring it here to this experience and this love for football. I am a Real Madrid fan through and through. There's never been another team that I've loved more than this team. My love for Real Madrid started with my appreciation of Raul Gonzalez. That was my idol when I was a young kid. That was the first player that really got me into watching Real Madrid. So that's kind of a little bit of background for some of our newer subscribers. And that's what you're going to hear here. A love for Madrid. I give you a fan's perspective. I try to give my own analysis. You're not going to see breakdowns and tactical analysis here, because I don't want to, say things that I think you got to be you got to be humble, but you also got to be realistic about what your talents are in that sense. Some guys are really good at analytics, at statistics when it comes to analyzing the game, at strategy. You know, they've coached the game, you know, and so I defer to the guys, experts over like that at, you know, in doing things like that. I look at the game and I look at it. I've been doing a lot more of stuff looking at the XG and the stats, and I think it's important, but I also like just looking at the game and enjoying it for fun and taking, you know, not looking so much at the stats and maybe analyzing it after, but not diving so much into that. I leave that to the other guys that really love those statistics, and there is some great stuff like that. I don't know his name for how to say it, but Om Armvind, I think he's from Managing Madrid. I like watching his, you know, listening to some of his tactical analysis on the game and things like that. So I would defer to those guys as well. But, you know, that's what the podcast is about. It's a fan podcast, and I'm happy to answer any of your questions, guys, and you know, and just get involved in the debates all the time with Real Madrid. So this is the YouTube version of our podcast. Well, this is the audio. There is an audio version of the podcast and a YouTube version. It's essentially the same thing, only that in one you get to see my face, and that's on our YouTube channel. So you can find that at youtube.com, obviously, and just look up Y Nada Más Podcast. You will find us there. So for you guys that are new, that are listeners of the podcast, if you have not subscribed to our YouTube, listen, do me a huge favor. Subscribe to the YouTube channel, even if you don't, you know, are not planning on watching it on YouTube. But if you have a YouTube channel, that would help us out tremendously, guys, tremendously, because, you know, as you get more subscribers on YouTube, you get to open up different things. And I really want to get is the, like, the vanity URL, which allows me to put, like, have the, it be like at Y Nada Más Podcast on YouTube instead of like some random string of numbers and code, which is kind of what it is right now. So that just helps us, you know, hit the subscribe button. If you want notifications of every time there's a new episode, you can hit the bell. So that would really help us out there. If you're watching the YouTube version of the podcast, you can see all of our social media handles here at the bottom on the ticker. We are on Instagram at YNM Podcast. We are on Facebook at Y Nada Más Podcast. And we are on Twitter at Y Nada Más Podcast. Twitter is the one where I am the most active. I never became a Twitter person until I jumped on and started doing this podcast, really enjoying it. Now, football Twitter is a crazy place. It's full of really weird people and really toxic people, but at the same time, it's full of really good Madridistas who give a lot of really cool insight, have difference of opinions, but they are really lovers of the game. So I like being on there as well and chatting with all of you guys. So check it out there on at Y Nada Más Podcast is where I am most active. I'm also on the Instagram occasionally. Most of the time it's, you know, most of the time it's my good friend, our graphic designer. He's posting up graphics there. I do some graphic design myself. So it's really a group effort there, putting things there. And then check us out on the web, ynadamas.net. My good friend Trombach. Trombach is one of our senior contributors here at Y Nada Más. He has written some great articles. He posts them on our website, ynadamas.net. And then he's also been featured on this podcast as well. He jumps on every once in a while. And he was in our last episode of the podcast. So that's all that kind of stuff. So, you know, full disclosure, guys, this is like the third time or the fourth time I'm recording this podcast because we had technical difficulties. I don't know. I'm always trying to fix things. You know, technology doesn't always work the way it is. I've been involved in radio and tech and working with social media stuff for so many years. And still, there is not a day. There's still always a time where it just fails for no reason, and it just wants to be an asshole. Technology just wants to be an asshole and not let you do the things you want to do. So I recorded this thing like three times, and then it was sounding bad, and it was cutting out, and there was problems with the buffering and all this kind of shit. And, you know, so this is like the third time. Full disclosure there. That's why it would have come out earlier had all this crap not happened. But also, I was going to record it right after the Atletico game, but then, of course, I knew that today was going to be, and this is Monday when I am recording the podcast, that today was going to be the draw for the Champions League. Now, this is after, I'm recording this after the Champions League draw, the second one, because the first one was obviously a complete clusterfuck, and, you know, a lot of craziness happened there. But at the end of the day, guys, you know, UEFA is going to UEFA, and we can't, you know, we can whine about it all we want. We know they're not going to change things, and they're definitely not going to do it to suit Real Madrid. So obviously, you know, at first we had Benfica, you know, a much more accessible opponent, and now we have PSG. I will get into a little bit more of that at the end. I'm going to have a whole rant on that. That's like my goal for this podcast. But my rant isn't going to be about, you know, the draw. It's just going to be about we have no fear of PSG and not to have any fear of PSG. So with that said, the other thing I wanted to talk about, yeah, fantastic, fantastic string of games, guys. It's been insane to see. You know, I think the funny thing is, you know, when November, 28th came around, which I think was when the Sevilla game was, it was like late November, right? Right after Thanksgiving, when we were going to have that string of five games that were going to be tough. You know, it was Sevilla, Athletic Bilbao, Sevilla, Real Sociedad, Athletic Bilbao. Then it was going to be Inter Milan, and then, of course, ending with the Madrid Derby, Atletico Madrid. So the crazy thing for all of us was, are they going to be able to pull this off, right? Are they going to be able? And I think, you know, the pessimistic Madridistas, sometimes I call them self-hating Madridistas, the ones that expect the worst but hope for the best, as they say. Those guys thought we were most likely probably going to drop some points in that run of five games. And I think, honestly, I think that was a fair assessment, because the team before then had, you know, we were suffering games, you know, we would score early and then kind of sit back, and then we were having tough times against teams in the second half, you know, letting them back into the game when we shouldn't have, you know, there was a lot of stuff like that. And so it was, I think it was really easy to say, hey, you know, I don't think we're going to be able to get all the points out of these games. These are some tough opponents. Real Sociedad was on fire earlier in the season. Sevilla is obviously still in second place, and they are still gunning. They are still chasing that La Liga title. Atletico Madrid is, of course, last year's champions. Athletic Bilbao is always a pain for us. So regardless of their form, Inter, of course, is a tough team. You know, we're last year's Serie A champions, so we were going to play them for the first spot in the Champions League, in the group D of our Champions League, of the Champions League. So all of those things. And it was, I wouldn't say it was, I think it was difficult to be really, really optimistic and say, oh, we're absolutely going to dominate everyone. But hey, guys, it's crazy. It happened. And there was a lot of talk, of course, at the beginning of this, you know, Modric, Casemiro, Kroos, they've played so many minutes. Not only, you know, I mean, Kroos obviously hasn't played a lot of minutes for his international team because he's retired from his national team. But of course, he was coming back from that, the pelvic area or his pubic bone, essentially, where he got injured. And, you know, it was a worrisome injury because it takes quite a bit to heal. And then Modric, obviously, you know, just 36 years old, running around, you know, playing for Croatia, captaining the Croatian national team, being, at this point, a vice captain and sometimes captain of Real Madrid, just playing a crazy amount of minutes. Casemiro as well, because there's really not there is no replacement for Casemiro on this team right now as of yet. There are guys that can have the potential to be. So that midfield three, you know, and Ancelotti had already said, I'm not going to play the 4-4-2 anymore. I'm going to go with the 4-3-3, which in my opinion is what this team has shown to be most comfortable in. And, you know, after a good string of games of Luka Modric and Casemiro decided, hey, you know, Luka Modric, Casemiro, and Kroos said, hey, I'm never going to touch those midfield three. So a lot of people were worried if he's not going to touch those midfield three, that means they're going to get a lot of games. They're going to be very tired. You know, he's not going to rotate the starting 11. We have guys like Camavinga. We have guys like Fede Valverde. So there was a lot of criticism there. And of course, guys, if you are new Real Madrid fans, but if you know Real Madrid, you know, there is a lot of, there is definitely, you know, if you are a fan of Real Madrid, there is, you know, the time in the past of Ancelotti's time at Real Madrid was one of the criticisms was essentially that he did not rotate players, you know, and the team suffered for it. So there is that sort of feeling that he is kind of going along those same lines. But here's the thing. We don't know what goes on behind the scenes. And so I was critical of this, and we spoke about it in the last podcast with Trambach. He was even critical about, you know, we have to rotate these guys. You know, they look tired, that kind of thing. And he didn't do it. But I think now, if you look back, and hindsight's always 20/20, right? But if you look back, I think Ancelotti made a calculated risk. He was like, I need my best guys. This is a tough string of games. I need my best guys, because I think in Ancelotti's mind, in his, you know, that I feel calm, cool, collected, sort of father figure-esque kind of feeling that he emanates, that classy, always in the Italian suit, very, you know, I'm pretty sure it's an Italian suit. He's an Italian dude. Why not? So I think he thought to himself, well, this is a tough string of games, but if I come out of these five games winning the points and playing my best, you know, my best starting 11, I have the possibility of coming out of these five games as the leader of La Liga and of leading the group in the Champions League. And essentially then afterwards, I have, you know, a string of games that isn't as difficult, Cadiz and some of these other teams. There's a winter break. And then also, you know, the Champions League isn't going to pick up until a little bit later, as well. There's a break from the Champions League as well. So I think he was thinking about that and like saying, I will have a time to rest these guys. I will have a time to rotate them. So he took a calculated risk. Now that risk paid off. You know, we did have a scare with Karim Benzema, but it looks like, you know, he's going to be back and he's going to be fine. You know, it was just one game that he was out the whole time. Then he came back in the game against Atletico, scored the first goal, and then dipped after the first half, did what he had to do. And that's what this is what the team is. I mean, this is he took that calculated risk. And at this point, it's kind of one of those things where everyone is criticizing at the beginning. But so if it would have failed, if this whole risk would have failed, this calculated risk would have failed, and, you know, players got injured and were out and we suffered because of it, he would look like the biggest, you know, failure. But the fact that he did it now and he was able to get through it, he looks like the biggest genius ever, you know, and everyone loves Don Carlo Ancelotti more than ever now, you know. And the crazy thing is, if you look back, I mean, the crazy thing about all of this, though, is if we look back at the past season, we're essentially talking about the same team. This is the same team, you know? And we actually lost very important parts of our team. We lost guys like Rafael Varane. We lost guys like Sergio Ramos. But besides that, also last season was crazy because it was a tough season because we had so many injuries, problems with COVID. We were playing in the Alfredo Di Stefano. We were not playing with fans. You know, the world was still, I think it still is, you know, in hanging somewhat in a balance, I would say, getting sort of in and out of COVID, sort of in and out, you know, of the situation with COVID. So that was, I think it was just a difficult season. It was a difficult season. We had Zidane. And I think Zidane, you know, I don't like to compare the two because I love both of these guys. I hate the fact that Madridistas are pitting, like, you know, and I think it's the media, man, because as much as I like watching El Chiringuito, I feel like Pedrerol definitely has an agenda against Zidane, probably because Zidane doesn't play by, you know, play the media game. And Ancelotti's a little bit, you know, I think better in front of cameras and definitely more of a gentleman and knows how to conduct, not knows how to conduct himself, but he's a little bit more just like, I think, calm and cool about it, which is easy to do when the team is doing well and difficult to do when the team is, you know, constantly. But I think what happened with Zidane is he just hated the fact that they were constantly badgering the team. And then, you know, rumors were coming out that he was going to be replaced and rumors were coming out that players wanted to leave and all sorts of shit like that. I think he started getting an animosity towards the media, and those guys now obviously have an agenda against him. But Zidane was, I think, a good man manager when it comes to being like everybody on the team. He's such an idol that everybody on the team wants to impress him. You know, these guys looked up to him. They probably watched him when they were young and looked up to him as being one of the best players that ever played the game and thought, you know, if I can show up for Zidane, you know, I have made it, you know. So he managed more along those lines and can motivate them and make them basically run and go out and play every game like it was a final, which was what he became famous for. But let's be real. I mean, the crazy thing is, and I don't want to overuse that word crazy. I feel like I'm saying it a lot. The thing is, I think the awesome thing is, the impressive thing is, if we really look back at some of the biggest titles, the titles that Real Madrid has won in what, the past 7 years or so, it's been under Ancelotti. It's been under Ancelotti with Zidane as his second in command, right, as his assistant. Then Zidane comes in, so Ancelotti wins La Decima, right? Then Zidane comes in, he wins the three-peat of Champions Leagues. He wins a La Liga title, you know. Ancelotti also had a Copa del Rey to his name, of course. So we got all of these incredible wins under what is essentially this dynasty of Ancelotti and this dynasty of Ancelotti and Zidane somehow being related, right? Being part of this team. And Zidane is still, you know, very much a part of this team. I think, you know, he's going to all the games. He's still very, like, you know, involved and shows his support. And now, I mean, even though it's very early in the season, but, you know, we've opened up this gap with second place and then with the rest of our rivals, that I really think it's too early to say it, but it's definitely something that you can be like, hey, this 35th La Liga title is loading. There is a possibility now. There is a dream now that we can win. We can get everything. You know, we can win everything. Now there is a feeling that this team is starting to come together and we can win everything. And why not? This is Real Madrid. Real Madrid is seemingly recovering and seems like recovering quickly if you really think about it, since Cristiano left and sort of the dip in form and the dip that was normally going to happen and the restructuring that was going to happen. But there is a renewed sense of, you know, that kind of the darker days of after Cristiano left are kind of coming to an end. For all of the things that people bitched about Florentino, myself included, about, you know, we weren't buying players, we weren't bringing in players, you know, we were being he was being very, very, very stingy, you would say. But then it turns out, almost as if Florentino knew that the pandemic was going to happen, that his management of this club has allowed us to remain where we are now, guys, and has allowed us to really overcome, you know, the loss of somebody like Cristiano Ronaldo and the loss of players like Varane and Sergio Ramos, but has allowed us to overcome a worldwide pandemic and a worldwide situation that financially affected so many clubs, and allowed us to come somewhat, not, I would not say unscathed, but allowed to come out, us to come out better than a lot of other teams were able to come out of, were able to do during this pandemic. We were able to survive it. And that is because of the work that Florentino put in and his foresight in seeing that, you know, it was going to take some time to rebuild, and that whole idea of tranquilo, tranquilo, we have to be patient, guys. But Madridistas aren't patient. So I think it's normal. You know, we aren't patient. We are pessimistic. We do push our players too much as a fan base. But that's what it is, because it's a club that's gotten used to winning. We've gotten used to winning, you know. We are a very discerning fan base. We are a very exigente, a team, a very demanding fan base that wants its players to shine, wants our players to showcase to the world, to consistently showcase to the world why we are the best. And you can't come into this club and just sort of sit back and relax, because you will hear it from the fan base. You will hear it from the fan base. So sometimes it's good, sometimes it's bad. Like, sometimes I like it and I understand the pressure, but sometimes there's a lot of craziness that goes overboard. And, you know, we have one bad game and everybody's automatically wanting to, you know, to slice off the head of the coach or a certain players. You know, we didn't have tolerance for Vinicius. A lot of people didn't have tolerance for Vinicius these last few years. And then, of course, now, you know, everyone's on the Vinicius bandwagon and on the train. And I was one that was critical of Vinicius. Not so much that I was shitting on him and wanting to, but I did believe, you know, maybe he needs a loan out or something like that. And he shut me up, you know. Asensio, I think, is coming back for a lot of us and shutting people up and kind of finding his way again. It's strange. I think it's that last season really was so full of other kinds of drama, extracurricular drama, that we couldn't see that. I think at the core, this team has always been a pretty solid team of youngsters and some veterans that could go further if they were healthy, if, you know, things just kind of fell in their way a little bit. So now we're seeing that. Now we're seeing the fruits of it. We're seeing, you know, who knew that Alaba and Militao were going to get along so well so quickly? Who knew that Militao was going to just morph into this? I mean, I know he had a great season last season, but he's morphed into this absolute beast Hulk back there in the defensive line. Carvajal, of course, is always class, and he's had some tough games, you know. Mendy, of course, you know, doing what he's doing in the back line. Luka Modric, my God, guys, Luka Modric, this game against Atletico, who is this man? I mean, I am, you know, for you guys that are new listening to my podcast, I am a Luka Modric fanboy. I'm also a Sergio Ramos fanboy. As you can see, I have like still stuff of his in the back, but he's no longer with the team. But I am a Luka Modric fanboy, so much so that I named my firstborn son after Luka Modric. His name is Lucas. My wife didn't want me to use Luka because she's like, we're not Italian, we're not Croatian, so let's call him Lucas because that's the Hispanic version of it. Now I really like wish sometimes, but we still call him Luquita because Luquita, you know, Lucas for short, we would say, you know, Luquita. So I got that, man. I mean, his you could see right there, if you're watching the video, I have his jersey from when he was number 19 on Real Madrid before he got the number 10. I'm a diehard fan of Luka Modric. I mean, nothing, he cannot, I don't think I could love that dude possibly more than I do. My dream would be to shake that man's hand and have a conversation with him. Hopefully one day I can have him on this podcast. I would love to sit down with that dude, you know, and just, you know, shoot the shit about football and talk to him about his life and you know, just reminisce about the career that he's had at Real Madrid once this is over, which who knows when it could be, because he's 40 years old. He's 36 years old and he can play well into his 40s. So the other thing that I was thinking about, you know, was speaking of Luka Modric was, you know, a lot of people were going, when we were talking about, you know, trying to make sure that he wasn't overplaying these guys, you know, really at the end of the day, you know, a lot of these players came out and said they felt fine, you know, that the media was, you know, pressuring a little bit too much about the whole, you know, we need to rotate players, that they were feeling fine. You know, we don't see the things that happen behind the scenes. I'm pretty sure Ancelotti is asking, you know, Pintus, you know, he's asking him, you know, hey, how are these guys doing? What do you think? How do they look? Are they fit? Could they play this amount of minutes? How is Kroos doing after his injury? You know, how's Luka Modric doing? Luka Modric is obviously telling him he feels fine. And this is the thing though, you know, when a player tells you that they feel fine, I remember when I was coaching fighters, man, listen, athletes, whether they're fighters or whether they play soccer or football or, you know, or play American football or play basketball, they might pick up an injury, but athletes at the core, many athletes are so competitive. And I saw this in the fight game, and you see this in a fight game. If you watch fighting guys, kickboxing, MMA, whatever, a guy gets knocked down, right? Well, they don't have standing eight counts in MMA, but a guy next gets knocked down. You know, you see that, do they have standing accounts in MMA? Shit. Now I don't know. I haven't even watched as much as much I used to. But anyway, you get a standing eight count. So somebody gets knocked down, right, and they pop back up, and the ref is like, you know, counting in front of his face and saying, you know, are you good to go? Are you good to go? And a lot of times, man, some of these guys might have a concussion. Some of these guys might be have a broken nose. They might be bleeding. They might still be dazed from a real hard hit. And I guarantee you they will say they are fine. They will say they are fine because the competitiveness of these athletes at a high level, professional athletes, is always going to say, I'm ready. I'm hungry to go. And that's where the ref has to step in the fighting world and protect the fighter from himself. You know, if he sees that he really isn't well and he isn't, you know, good to continue. And then in football, you know, it's Ancelotti, it's Pintus that have to be like, nah, dude, you're not fine. You know, if we play you, you're going to run the risk of getting hurt, as much as we know you want to go out there and play. So I'm pretty sure Modric and all these guys are going to tell him he's fine, but these guys are the team is probably making sure, like, is he really fine, you know? And, but the funny thing about Luka Modric is, you know, he goes out after the game, you know, he comes off the pitch and after the game says, you know, hey guys, I feel like I'm 20 years old. I feel like I'm 20 years old. And, you know, and then, you know, he might be 36, guys, but you know why I believe Luka Modric when he says that he feels like he's 20 years old and he says that he's fit and he's ready to go? Because he's playing like a man that looks playing like a dude that's 20 years old. That's what he's playing like right now. I mean, if we look at our, you know, eternal rivals, which Barcelona, and you look at two of the biggest names that have played for Barcelona, Xavi, who I absolutely will never like because he's such an anti-Madrid guy, and I feel like, you know, the pinnacle of some of the arrogance that comes from culés is Xavi. But Iniesta, on the other hand, who I have a ton of respect for and I think is a great player, loved him when he was on the Spanish national team, loved him, one of the only players from Barcelona that I could really tolerate, that I would really say, you know, I wish Iniesta would play for our team, you know. Iniesta was such a great player. And you see him now, you know, pretty much almost at the age of that Modric has, playing in the Japanese league, you know. Xavi retired from football, you know, at 36 years old. They weren't even in the game. Luka Modric is in the game, and not only in the game, but he's playing it at the highest level. He's playing it against Atletico. I mean, he's playing it at Real Madrid, one of the toughest squads in the world to get a starting. I mean, there's a ton of young guns looking to take that spot, and he's still beating them out. I mean, young guns will take your spot at Real Madrid if anybody is chomping at the bit to take your spot at Real Madrid if you aren't 100% fit or looking good. I mean, we see it with Eden Hazard. Eden Hazard came, and it was expected that Eden Hazard, Gareth Bale, and Benzema was going to be our starting three, the starting forwards, and that's gone, man. It's Vinicius now. It's Vinicius. He is the titular indiscutible, you know, as they say, the, you know, like the, his start, him in the starting 11 is something that cannot be disputed, you know, at this point. And Eden Hazard got bumped because Eden Hazard didn't have the work rate, maybe not enough of the attitude, obviously suffered from injuries. And I love Eden Hazard, and I wish we could see the Eden Hazard of old because we could really use him as well, but it's not there. You know, we're not seeing it. And Vinicius took his spot, and Vinicius is shining. And right now could be is probably one of the top players in the world this season, in the form he's in currently. It's absolute insanity, right? So going back to that, you know, going back to the Xavi Iniesta thing is, you know, like I said, people could take away that spot from Modric, but he's not allowing them to because he's playing so incredibly well. He's not allowing them to. You don't want to take these dudes out. I mean, you do want to take them out for, you know, to give them a breather every once in a while and have, you know, somebody like Pere Valverde and Camavinga, who are the next potential, you know, guys who are going to inherit those positions, Antonio Blanco as well, you know, those guys can inherit some of these positions. But Modric isn't letting that happen. And for right now, he's absolute. I mean, the game he had against Atletico Madrid, I mean, let's go into that. The game he had against Atletico Madrid was absolutely phenomenal. It was another masterclass. And this is the thing. He's not doing this against the lower people, the lower tiers of the team. He's not doing lower teams of La Liga. He is doing this against Atletico Madrid. He is doing this against the teams in the upper half of, you know, of the table. So, I mean, because, you know, having an insane game against, you know, a bottom team that's struggling, it can be impressive, but at the same time, it's not, you know, where you're matching up. Like, Koke was frustrated against, you know, Koke, who is a talented midfielder and has played for Atletico Madrid for quite some time and has been involved with Atletico Madrid with the two Liga titles they have won. Koke, you know, he's a phenomenal midfielder, was frustrated with Modric, could not keep up with him. Modric was all over the pitch, making interceptions, making passes, making tackles, you know, trying to create chances. You know, the guy was unstoppable. And of course, you have the quiet killer, the sniper there, which is Toni Kroos, you know, making the long passes, making sure, you know, making the long passes, making the through balls, shooting on goal when he needs to, because he's been scoring some bombers, you know, bangers this year. It's insane. That midfield three, if you look at the Atletico Madrid game, and I think I have some stats here that I'm going to throw up on the screen for you guys that are listening. You know, if we look at the overall stats, I mean, look, 53 duels won by Real Madrid. The numbers on the left-hand side represent Madrid, and the numbers on the right-hand side of these columns are Atletico. You know, they had 581 accurate passes, 53 duels won, 104 duels in total. So out of both teams had, the funny thing is both teams had 104 duels. Real Madrid won more of them. They had, the crazy thing here though with this is that one of the things I was looking at, and it's not a stat I have up there, so I'm going to take this one down, but here's the stat of like the possession. You know, we had 61% possession, and I want to get into the expected goals because that's another crazy thing that's been happening this season. But what I saw from so when I looked at the midfield stats of the game against Atletico Madrid is that you could see that the tackles being made, it's funny. I think Modric had something like three interceptions. Casemiro also had something like three interceptions. I think Toni Kroos had one. Then there were like tackles. Casemiro had maybe four. Toni Kroos, I don't know if he had any like successful tackles, but Modric had them as well. So a lot of the tackles and a lot of the ball recoveries and a lot of the interceptions were being done in the midfield. Whereas if you look at the numbers for Atletico, the majority of the tackles and interceptions that they had were being done in the defense. So that goes to show you that we were overrunning their defense. We were overrunning them. I'm sorry, their midfield. Our midfield was winning the battle, and so much so that the defense was the one that had to pick up the slack from the midfield and was the one that had to try and defend Real Madrid from getting, from scoring. So, and the crazy thing here, you know, and I do use that number, that word again, is because if you look at the expected goals here, which I've thrown up on screen, Real Madrid had 0.43 expected goals. The shots they had, the goals they scored to make it 2-0 against Atletico Madrid, and which we've been seeing, is that this season they have been consistently exceeding their expected goal number, right? They have been consistently exceeding it. So what does that say to you? That says, you know, that they are scoring they're actually scoring the lower percentage shots. They're scoring the more difficult shots because Atletico Madrid had an expected goal number of 1.04. They essentially should have scored a goal or should have at least, could have at least tied up the game at some point, but they didn't. And all of that is also due to the fact that if I bring up this stat, these stats again, is if we look at the amount of saves the keeper had, Oblak had one save. Thibaut Courtois had six saves, guys. Thibaut Courtois had six saves. So not only was our midfield putting work, our defense was putting in work, and then Thibaut was coming out big again and saving us, you know. But at the end of the day, it was such a dominant performance, really, if you look at it from the midfield and everything, that it seemed like Atletico Madrid's chances of really scoring with a Thibaut that was on fire, with a midfield that was on fire, with a Militao that was just playing again, having another banger, they weren't going to win that game. The funny thing is even Cristóbal Soria, who I don't like from El Chiringuito, who always criticizes Madrid, was saying that the game against Atletico Madrid looked like they could have gone on to play, you know, another entire half, and Atletico probably wouldn't have scored, you know, and Real Madrid would have still had chances and created chances to score. That's how much our midfield was dominating that game. That's what Luka Modric was doing. That's what Kroos was doing. Vinicius was having, even though he didn't score, he is still such a threat. He is still such a problem for those defenses. He created the two assists, one from the left side of the field and one was on the right side of the field. It's crazy. You know, he set up the assist for Benzema's volley, a difficult shot, you know, a low percentage shot, I'm saying, Benzema scored that one. And then, you know, he sets up basically the pass to Asensio for the second goal of the game. So, you know, even Jovic stepping in, Jovic, you know, was the one who actually got that attack started and held the ball enough to get, you know, to allow Vinicius to get forward and fly through there on the left flank and then essentially go, you know, hit that diagonal pass all the way across the field to Asensio, and boom, low shot, a difficult shot, but a right into the bottom left corner where Oblak could not get it. And it was just insane to see, you know, another testament to how this team is playing. They're just playing fun football. They're playing dynamic football. They're playing, you know, one of the other things that I heard, you know, from one of the ESPN analysts was, I think it was Fernando Palomo, who I actually like. He's the voice on FIFA, if you play FIFA in Spanish. But he's also one of the ESPN commentators. One of the things he was saying is that you see that, so I think, I don't know how you say in English, cambio de banda, you know, so where it was, you're switching play, right? So you're going from one flank to the other flank. So Real Madrid actually leads the league in the amount of switches of the flank. So they pass from one side to the other. And what Fernando Palomo was saying, and I think that's interesting to think about, is Real Madrid is doing a lot of these passes, switching flanks. So what they're doing essentially is they're letting the ball do the movement. They're letting the ball do the running. And they are somewhat, so that allows, you know, the ball to move, and they're the ones just, you know, getting into position. And so they're letting the ball do the work, and they're not running across the field with possession. So, which, you know, takes less of a toll on them physically, because, you know, they're making these long passes, they're switching the sides, they're moving off, they're off the ball movement essentially is getting them into those positions to receive the next pass. So what they're doing is just, you know, like clockwork, doing all this work in order to get to the right position and to get into the right positions and set up the play in order for them to maximize, you know, the attack, and then finally get a shot on goal, create a chance, and win the game. And that's where we're at right now. It's phenomenal. We're in a phenomenal spot, guys, and I'm happy about it. I'm happy about it. I think there's no reason to doubt this Real Madrid team. So with that said, the one thing that I want to bring up before we go today is the draw with PSG. So I see a lot of people, you know, yeah, you know, the like I said, UEFA is going to do what they're going to do with Seferin and Al Khelaifi and all this kind of stuff. You know, they're going to do what they're going to do. It's shady as hell. But at the end of the day, man, I think sometimes, you know, if they screwed up, they said it was a software problem, which I don't understand how it could be a software problem if you're putting, yeah, you know, what are you putting, balls in a bowl? Like, where's the software issue? So that was just a cop out. Really, they were, you know, just bad. Either it was a bad job or it's a legit corrupt system. You know, if you give them the benefit of the doubt, it's just incompetence. And then if you've been give them the benefit of the doubt that it was a mistake, it's really up to incompetence and a lack of organization. And then if it wasn't, then it's corruption, you know, which either one. I mean, you could choose either one and you would be corrupt. Incompetence or corruption, they go hand. I mean, those are synonymous with UEFA, you know. Incompetence and corruption are two terms that are synonymous with UEFA. So anyway, yeah, we could have gotten Benfica. But listen, guys, if you want to win the Champions League, you're going to face the tough guys sooner or later. You could say, oh, I don't want to face them so soon. Oh, I don't want to do this. I don't want to do that. But But listen, this is what I like. This is, you know, yeah, we could have gotten Benfica and I would have been more excited. Yeah, I'm a little bit worried about PSG. But you know why? At the end of the day, I'm not. Because here's my thing. And this is what I'm going to say. The opportunity, guys, the opportunity to see the look on Al Khelaifi's face, Leonardo's face, Cristóbal Soria, J. Jordi from El Chiringuito, all the naysayers, all the anti-Madrid pundits that are in ESPN Deportes and ESPN, this, which is chock full of anti-Madrid commentators, to see the look on their face when if we potentially win this thing, the amount of shit they're going to have to eat, you know, the basically, you know, to shut them up. It's so worth it, guys. It is so worth it. Messi FC crying at the fact that Real Madrid has eliminated him yet from another Champions League. To see that photo again of Leo Messi looking at the grass, staring at the grass, hands on his hips. Once again feeling, my God, I have been eliminated from another Champions League, and the only difference between this and the times I've lost it with Barcelona is the fact that I'm wearing a different shirt. That in itself is enough to make this entire thing worth it. The fact that if we beat them, we are not only going to beat them and eliminate them from the Champions League, but we are potentially going to be taking, or at least we already, it already seems like it's set that we are going to take their best player away from them. So even if we were to lose to them, Mbappé is still going to be ours for free. Well, not free, but you know what I mean, right? So, you know, we're going to have taken him with not having to pay them a transfer fee, you know? So that to me, it's all worth it, guys. It is all worth it to see it on their faces. Because even at the end of the day, who are the people that are against Real Madrid at this point? Yeah, it could be PSG fans who are really Messi FC fans and former Barcelona fans who have no loyalty whatsoever, only to one player. And I don't blame Leo Messi for that. I blame the spine of the people that are following, you know, that are just switching sides because your favorite player happens to play for a different team. But the anti-Madrid hate is so much with these Barcelona guys that they are looking at this game. They are looking. They were happy when we got PSG because of the fact that they felt like those guys can eliminate Real Madrid, right? Can eliminate Real Madrid. When they don't take a look at the problems in their own house, which is that they are eliminated. They are a shell of their former selves, Barcelona. They have to face Napoli, which happens to be one of my other favorite teams because I follow Serie A and I love Napoli and I love all things Italian culture. And I think I've said it before, I'm learning the language. I love Naples, you know, and I'm so happy that they're going to play them. And I can't wait to see it. I hope Napoli eliminates them because it'll be a win-win to have Napoli eliminate Barcelona and have Real Madrid eliminate another team that I do not like, which is PSG. You know, it is so worth it, guys. I'm so hungry for this. It's not a reason to be worried, guys. We can beat this team. I was actually listening to the English pundits, you know, the English speaking pundits on ESPN, and a lot of them are backing Real Madrid for this. Because what? Because they see a team right now, guys. If you look at Real Madrid, you are seeing a team right now that is organized, that actually has a plan, that seems to play with a plan of attack, that has a solid midfield, that has a solid defense, and has a solid group of players in the front that can score goals. The only thing that's going to be really an issue and that they were saying is going to remains to be seen is how the two teams are going to arrive at the game. How healthy are the two teams going to be when they meet? But they favorite the midfield of Real Madrid is, you know, night and day better than the midfield of PSG. The defense, I think we have a more solid defense with the exception of Marquinhos. Even if Ramos plays, he is not the same Ramos from before. But I'm going to be so sad to see him. I got him right here on a poster behind me, he's Ramos. I have him there, you know, his kind of profile pic, a side of his face. And then I got, you know, his jersey behind me as well. I am a Sergio Ramos fan. It's going to hurt me so much to see him play against Real Madrid. But it is what it is. Time happens, and that's what, you know, but I wouldn't boo the guy. You know, I love the guy to death. But I think we have a more solid defense, a younger defense right now. Like I said, with the exception of Marquinhos, who can definitely change a game. He is a phenomenal defender. You have really Mbappe to worry about. Messi isn't going to drop down and defend, you know. Neymar hasn't had a good season, and he's coming, you know, he's been perpetually injured at this point. I think we have more than a shot to beat these guys, you know. So I don't think, bring it on. Bring it on. You know, to me, the PSG isn't the tough team to beat. I'm looking at Bayern. I'm looking at Manchester City. I'm looking at Liverpool, the way they're playing. You know, Chelsea, you know, which they've all suffered some defeats as well. All of these teams have been tested and have lost. Bayern has lost, you know, but they lost, 5-0 against Borussia Mönchengladbach this year. It's up in the air. There's a chance for us. There is a chance for Real Madrid to win this game. And there's a chance for Real Madrid not only to eliminate PSG and just perpetually stick the dagger in worse to that team, and especially to Leonardo and Al Khelaifi, that they wanted to play hardball with Real Madrid. And then also all these guys on El Chiringuito and Messi FC, which they think, oh, you know, Leo Messi is going to go back to his jardín, to his garden, to his training ground that is the Santiago Bernabeu. Well, listen, guys, he hasn't scored at the Santiago Bernabeu in the last few years. He hasn't played at the new Santiago Bernabeu, the one that just opened, right? This is a new game. This is a new era. He's 34 years old. It's a different situation. And Vinicius is going to run up and down PSG. You know, he's going to run up and down the Parc des Princes, and he is going to score some goals, guys. And Karim Benzema is going to return to France with some goals as well. You know? I got no fear. I got no fear, and you shouldn't have fear either, because the possibility of doing all of those things and really just shoving it in their face is huge. And even if we were to lose, which is a distant possibility, guys, we still get Mbappe at the end of the season. We still take their best player away from them. And they still are a team that is lacking, regardless of the fact that they have all of these stars, they are a team that is lacking a plan, that is lacking a system from what we've seen from Pochettino. I like Pochettino, but he definitely, this team, we say in Spanish, le quedó grande. It's been a big task for him to manage. I can't even imagine Pochettino trying to manage that dressing room with all those egos, man. You know? It's got to be a tough one. So fear not, Madridistas, you know. And actually, I'll let you guys go with some, I mean, not let you guys go, but here's some, I'm going to put it on the screen. This is what Toni Kroos had to say about the Champions League draw.
Hi, guys. I hope you're all right. Just a quick comment about the draw today. I hope no more surprises left. So I hope I am in time with a comment. So very interesting. Very interesting opponent for the next round. I think the toughest that we could have faced from the five possible opponents. But I mean, that's the games we are playing for. As I said before, we're really looking forward to these games. A lot of quality on the pitch. And let's see what happened. But at the end, we are Real Madrid. We always, look forward to these kind of games and with a lot of confidence to reach the quarters. I think most important now to forget this, because we are doing extremely well in our daily business at the moment. That's the league, and there are a lot of games before we have the Champions League games. So most important is now to keep going the next games, next two games before Christmas to keep making our points, to get closer to our goal at the end of the season to win the title. I think that's most important. So concentration on this and Champions League after, when the time is there. All the best, guys.
So that was Toni Kroos, man. I mean, how can you not? How can you not be confident in a team when you got a guy like that? He said, you know, it's a tough draw. It's probably one of the toughest draws, but they're doing their daily business. We are at the, you know, we are right now 35th La Liga title loading. They are doing their daily business. They are playing well. And I think he's got no, they have no issue with the Champions League games. Don't worry about it when it comes to that. That's what he said right there. We are Real Madrid. We are Real Madrid. Here, you know, let me put on one of my favorite songs that I like to play every time I'm feeling really, really Madridista. So let me put this on for you. Oh God, man, I'm being a fool. But I want to be entertaining, guys. So I hope you like that. But anyway, guys, you know, that is the podcast for today, and the podcast for this week. So we have things coming up. You know, we have I think Cadiz is the next game coming up, and really it's great to be a Madridista, guys. You guys are in a great spot right now. I'm pretty sure everyone, you guys, whether you're walking to work, you're walking to school, you're walking to class, whatever it is, you're with your girl, you know, you doing whatever, you're a Madridista, bro. Oh, God. Okay, so, all right, guys. So, with that said, thank you for supporting the podcast. Once again, I thank you, everybody, for supporting the podcast and telling me and telling us, you know, that we're doing a good job. And then, you know, saying that they like the show, telling me personally on my Twitter. It's been awesome. And I really just want to keep it growing. I want to keep it fun. If you guys have any suggestions, hit me up through the DMs on Twitter, or just drop a line on Twitter. Hit us up at info@inadamas.net. If you are interested in doing the show, if you're interested in writing articles for us, maybe you want to be a sports writer, that's what you're studying, to be a writer or something, and you want to, you know, work on some stuff, maybe even get some credit, because I had a friend that once wrote for me on another publication that I had, and he was able to get credit for his, he was getting an MBA in like creative writing. I mean, sorry, MBA. He was getting a master's in creative writing, and it was able to help him out. So if you guys are, you know, need that, and you want a place to, you know, shoot your ideas and talk about Madrid and the team you love, man, hit me up. Hit us up at info@inadamas.net. Besides that, remember to follow us at Inadamas Podcast on Twitter, at Inadamas Podcast on Facebook, at YNM Podcast on Instagram, and then, of course, on our YouTube channel, which is youtube.com, and just look up Inadamas Podcast. I don't have the vanity URL yet, guys, but you can find us all there. And that's it. You know, that is all I have. And then please, if you are on Apple Podcasts, remember, leave a rating. Leave a rating, leave a comment. It helps us rise up. It helps us get out there to more people. And that's pretty much it, guys. I thank you so, so much for supporting this podcast, enjoying it, shooting the shit with me, even though like I'm not getting your feedback right away. But the fact that you guys, you know, we jump on and enjoy this and have fun, you know, watching the team, whether we win or lose, you know, it's great to be part of this community. So thank you guys for listening. Talk to you again soon.
This has been Y Nada Más, al Real Madrid Podcast.